The parasha of Yisro opens with Yisro's famous trip, his journey to be with Bnei Yisrael, whether it's before Matan Torah, after Matan Torah. And he brings with him three people who were not actually there with Moshe in Mitzrayim during that year, namely Zipporah, his wife, and his two sons. And they are described, the sons, in Pasuk Gimel and Dalet of Perek Yud Ches. Veshnei Boneha, her two sons, Zipporah's two sons, Sheshem Ha'echad Gershom. The first one was Gershom, Ki Amar Gerayisi Be'eretz Nachriya. I was a stranger in a strange land. Veshem Ha'echad Eliezer. And the other one was called Eliezer, Ki Elokei Avi Be'ezri Vayatzileni Micherev Paro. For the God of my fathers was with me, he saved me from Paro's sword. And there's some discussion in the Mefarshim as to why each reason was given to each child, especially as it seems that he was saved from Paro's sword before he became a stranger in a strange land. But nonetheless, there is a fascinating medrash with regards to the opening words of Pasuk Dalet, V'shem Ha'echad Eliezer. And this is a medrash Tanchuma in Parshas Chukas. And the medrash reads as follows. B'sha'a she'ola Moshe l'morom. When Moshe went up on high to receive the Torah, I mean, every word of this medrash is a chiddush. Shama kolo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He heard Hashem's voice, Yoshev v'osek b'parshas para aduma. Was, so to speak, and the whole medrash is so to speak. Sitting involved in the section of para aduma. Halacha b'shem Omra, and Hashem was saying the halacha in the name of the one who says it. Eliezer b'ni Omer, my son Eliezer says, this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu talking about Rabbi Eliezer. Egla bas shenasa. There's always a lot of parallel between the Egla Arufa and the end of Parsha Shoftim and the Para Aduma. What are the ages of these animals? The Egla needs to be a year old. Upara bas shtayim. The Para 2 years old or in its second year. This is the halacha that Moshe hears. Omar Moshe Lafonov. So Moshe asks, Ribono Shel Olam Ha'elyonim V'Tachtonim Shel Chahim, the entire world is yours, V'ata Omer Halacha B'Shmo Shebastav Adam, and you're saying halachas in the name of a person. If the whole thing seems backwards. Omar Lo, so Hashem said, Tzadik Echad Osid La'amod Ba'olami, in the future there will be a special tzadik in the world, V'asid Liftoach B'Parshas Par Aduma Tchila, and he will be the one that opens the discussion of Par Aduma, because this is the beginning of Maseches Parah, this is a Masechta of Mishnayos. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Egla Bas Shnosa U'Para Bas Shtayim. That's his psak. Interestingly, how is HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered the question? The question was, you are the Torah, you are the source of Torah. Why are you quoting people? And Hashem says, but this, because this is this amazing halacha. He just answered by rephrasing the question. There will be someone called Eliezer. He calls him a tzaddik. And somehow the matter is resolved. And Moshe is convinced, even though all that happened was the question was restated. Why are you saying halacha? Apparently this halacha is just out of this world. Amalafanov, so much so, Moshe was so taken by this. Ribon ha'olamim, yiratzon, sheyehei michalatzai. Halavai, may it be your will that he will be descended from me. So Moshe is on board. May he be descended from me, this Rabbi Eliezer. Amarla, so Hashem said, chayecha, sheyehei michalatzecha, by your life, he will be descended from you. It's very interesting. He's already being quoted. He hasn't yet been determined who he's been descended from, but it all works out. Hado dichsiv. Where is this notion that Rabbi Eliezer is descended from Moshe? As it says, v'shem ha'echad Eliezer. The name of the one is Eliezer. Meaning, v'shem oso ha'meyuchad Eliezer. It's a special, unique individual called Eliezer. And he's the son of Moshe. Shteit and pasuk. Of course, this medrash is difficult on pretty much every conceivable count, from beginning to end. Ein hamedrash hazeh omer ela darsheni. Firstly, the notion that Eliezer, the v'shem ha'echad Eliezer, is Eliezer ben Hurkanus, I don't think that's not pshat in the pasuk. I think it's fair to say, and it has nothing to do with what we're talking about. It is true, by the way. I mean, this we should note, for the sake of accuracy, that there is an issue with the pasuk. You say v'shema echad Eliezer because Eliezer was the second son, which means that one could have anticipated that the first son, it says asher shem ha'echad Gershom, the first one is Gershom, v'shem hasheni Eliezer, and the second one is Eliezer, just like it says there were two people in the machaneh back in Parshas, well, forwardly in Parshas Balosecha, shem ha'echad Eldad, shem hasheni Medad. That's the way to do it. And the Ibn Ezra talks about this, and he says sometimes it says Echad and Sheni, and sometimes it's Echad and Echad, so, and others feel that it's always Echad and Sheni, which means there's something unusual here. But something unusual doth not a medrash like that make. So what exactly does the medrash mean to tell us by somehow bringing in Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus hundreds of years later, and this is somehow an emanation of the words V'shem Ha'echad Eliezer. Secondly, if we may ask, why is everyone making such a big fuss out of his halacha about Paraduma? Is this the most outstanding thing that Rabbi Eliezer ever said? It's certainly not the most controversial thing he ever said. Rabbi Eliezer propounds halachas all over the place. This seems to be a rather, if one may say, technical matter. I mean, how old is the Parah Adumah? It is a machlokas, by the way. The Chachamim say it's got to be in its third year. Rabbi Eliezer says in its second year. I think we could have passed over that halacha and moved on to other halachas and found much more food for discussion in Rabbi Eliezer's psak. But somehow there's something about this psak of Rabbi Eliezer. It's got to be in its second year, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu quotes him by name, and Moshe himself just can't get over it. He's completely overwhelmed and asks that he be descended from him. So all of this, of course, needs to be considered. I mean, this midrash will need guidance here, that's for sure. Speaking of midrashim that we will need guidance with, there is a statement of the Mechilta on this pasuk, V'shema Echad Eliezer. And if we thought the first midrash was troubling, so we need to brace ourselves for the following. The Mechilta, of course, is Medrash Halacha. But once in a while, it also has statements of Agoda. It's not Medrash Rabbah or Tanchuma, but it also has certain things to say. Non-halachic. And on the words V'shem Ha'echad Eliezer, the Mechilta says, B'sha'ar sha'amar Moshe li'yisro, ten li tzipor bitcha le'isha. So the Medrash describes when Moshe came to Yisro and asks for Tzipora's hand. The Medrash doesn't describe him as asking, but Ten li Tzipora bitcha le'isha. So he's come to Yisro, to the future father-in-law. Amar lo Yisro. So Yisro says, I make one condition. Kabel alecha davar zeh she'omar lecha va'ani nosno. Lacha le'isha. I want you to accept the following one thing. Amarlo mahu. What's the thing? Amarlo ben sheyiye tchila yiye la'avodah zarah. Your first child will be for avodah zarah. Mikan ve'elech l'shem shemayim. From that point onwards, can be for the sake of heaven. But the first child, for avodah zarah. That's quite a stipulation. Says the Mechilta, v'kibel alav. And Moshe accepted. Very, very difficult. How could Moshe accept such a thing? It's unspeakable and unthinkable. And moreover, really, by this stage, why would Yisro even suggest such a thing? After all, Yisro's hung up his Avodah Zarah vestments. He's not interested in Avodah Zarah anymore. He's seen through it. That's what got him into so much trouble in Midian. He's in trouble, his family's in trouble. They're all being shunned because he sees that Avodah Zarah is an Arishkite. And he now stipulates that the first son should be for Avodah Zarah. We don't understand not Yisro's offer, not Moshe's acceptance, and they're the only two people in the conversation. So what's the meaning of this medrash? A fascinating insight and approach to these two midrashim comes from Reb Shimon Schwab in his Sefer Mayan Beis HaShoev. And he explains, Yisro, as we know, as we mentioned, and Rashi talks about it, he'd seen everything. He'd been involved in Avodah Zarah. He'd been involved in every type of Avodah Zarah. Rashi says that's why when he hears the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, he says, "Atoya dati ki gadol Hashem mikol ha'Elohim." I know that Hashem is greater than every other deity because he knows them all personally. He's from experience, and nothing came close to what he's hearing. He's already thrown the whole thing in. And from a certain point of view, there's a mila to that approach, in the sense that by the time he comes to embrace Torah, he knows exactly the real thing, because he knows the fake thing. He knows all of them. That was Yisro's journey, that was Yisro's path towards Torah. Yisro is of the opinion that that is the ideal path. Meaning, because he succeeded in seeing through the sham of Avodah Zarah and by contrast, the emes of Torah, he considers that to be, that's the way it should be done. First, the person, you should release him into Avodah Zarah. He'll be all right in the end, if he's got his head straight. And when he does, the results will be stellar, says Yisro. And Yisro is a product of that path. Moshe does not agree. As far as Moshe is concerned, if you have Yisro had to go that route because he was born into Avodah Zarah. He had to see through it. But if you're born into a Mesorah, that's the way to go. You can be aware of other things, but just mamish to be thrown in there and expected to work it out by yourself, we can see that it's something of a gamble. If you succeed, the results could be spectacular. If you don't, the results will be a disaster. So Moshe argues, and they reached a compromise. I mean, this is Yisro's stipulation, and Moshe accepted. So when Yisro says the first son is for Avodah Zarah, he doesn't mean I hope that he becomes dedicated to Avodah Zarah. Meaning the first son, you've got to do it my way, and that is he's got to be exposed to Avodah Zarah, and if he's as good as me, and Yisro hopes that he will be, he'll be okay in the end. He'll float. And that was the first son. The first son, Gershom, had a very different upbringing. The second son, Mikan Ve'elach Lashem Shamayim, he should be dedicated for the sake of heaven from day one. And if he never hears about Avodah Zarah, it's okay. You can do it. You can, from then on, you can do it your way, says Yisro. And maybe we'll see who turns out better. And Moshe accepted. And therefore, we're beginning to get a sense of why the younger son, Eliezer, although Gershom has been called Shem HaEchad, he's the first one, Eliezer is the second, but he's also called V'Shem HaEchad because he's a different one. He's his own first. He's not the second because he didn't follow the way of Gershom. It's a new path, and he's the first one in that path. And it's very interesting, as Schwab points out, that Eliezer's path is Derech HaAvos. Derech HaAvos, to follow the Mesorah of his parents. They'll see him right. He can trust them. And as Moshe gives the background to his name, V'Shem HaEchad Eliezer Ki Elokei Avi Be'ezri, because my father's God helped me. Moshe invokes Hashem's name as the God of his father because that's the way that he is bringing up Eliezer. That's how he comes to know it. It says, Moshe, I know about God from my father, and you'll know about him from me. And you don't really need to know anything else. You'll be fine. So that's the background to Shem HaEchad Eliezer. The Medrash has become containable, but it's still an enormous chiddush. Now we'll appreciate that in a sense the litmus test for a person's approach to Torah, is it seichel generated? He came to Torah because it makes so much sense to him, and there nothing else really, he saw through everything else, as opposed to coming to Torah through a Masorah. In a sense, the litmus test will be his relationship with those mitzvahs that seichel cannot encapsulate, cannot contain, otherwise known to us as chukim, statutes. We don't know what they're about. In a sense, someone whose upbringing has been seichel overall, and that brought him to Torah, but those aspects of Torah, and there are a number that seichel doesn't really embrace, so he won't embrace, not to the same degree. He'll be somewhat more lukewarm about them. As opposed to someone whose entry into Torah is through the Masorah, so whatever is good enough for his parents is good enough for him. Mishpatim he understands, Chukim he doesn't understand, and they're all good. Now, of course, when we talk about Chok, therefore, as the dividing issue between of someone whose approach is Seichel-based as opposed to Masorah-based, we'll come to the Parah Aduma. Parah Aduma is the Chok par excellence, pardon the expression. And indeed, the Medrash says in Koheles Rabbah, this is the Medrash's comment on the pasuk there. Amarti echkama v'hi rechoka mimeni. I thought that I would be wise, but it was too far. It's beyond me. This Shlom HaMelech says. Achacha mikol adam. The Medrash says that's a reference to Parah Aduma. So we say Parah Aduma. It is the classic chok. There's no explanation for it. Well, actually, there is one explanation. It's quite well known, which is interesting in terms of this. It's famous as being a chok, and no one has anything to say about it. And yet, there's a well-known notion that the Parah Aduma comes as a kapara for the Chet HaEgel. In the words of the Medrash, Tavo HaEim, right, the eagle is the calf, and the calf made a mess. It's a famous marshal. The mother, she brought her son. The son made a mess in the king's palace. They say, let the mother come and clean up the mess of the son. Tavo ha'eim u'tekaneach, toas ha'ben. And therefore, the eagle made a mess. Let the mother come. Let the mother cow. Which is very interesting because we're so used to Parah Aduma having no reason, but this is quite a well-known idea. And sounds like a reason of sorts. But says Reb Schwab, that notion that the Parah Aduma may have a reason, namely of taking care, cleaning up of the mess of the Egel, it might depend on one question, which will now become quite important. Namely, how old does the cow need to be as a Parah Aduma? You see, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Bechoros and Daf Yotes that a cow typically doesn't give birth until it's in its third year. Now, what about the Parah Aduma? Well, it happens to be, that's a machlokas. What is the age of Parah Aduma? It's the very first Mishnah in Maseches Parah, between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer. The Chachamim say, Parah bas shalosh, mean the Parah needs to be in its third year. Rabbi Eliezer, bas shtayim, in its second year. So this machlokas now takes on a new dimension. It's no longer, quote-unquote, just a logistical question or a technical question, second year, third year. What's at stake here is the notion as to whether you can perceive within the Parah Aduma the reason that's ascribed of the mother cleaning up the son. Because if by definition the Parah is only kosher before it's old enough to be a mother, then presumably that reason doesn't apply. You could perceive that reason if the Parah Aduma needs to be at the age where it could have could have calves. And therefore, this machlokas, according to the Chachamim, it's in its third year. If it's in its third year, it could be a mother. And therefore, you could ascribe this reason of motherhood and the mother's cleaning up the mess of the child. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, we get a new insight as to what's at stake here. When he says it's in the second year, he is essentially sidelining that reason for the Parah Adumah. It's not kosher when it could be a mother. It's only kosher before. Presumably that mother cleaning the mess is not part of it. And we don't have anything else. And therefore it reverts to pure chok, so to speak. And that's really what's so special about this machlokas. Now, Moshe has a request. Yehi ratzon that Rabbi Eliezer should be descended from me. So Rav Schwab explains that what he means to say is that according to Rabbi Eliezer, this is a pure chok. But the only people that are capable of embracing a chok fully are those that were brought up in Moshe's path, where they get their Torah from the Masorah. As far as they're concerned, chukim and mishpatim, it's all the same. And therefore, this is really the mila of that path, according to Moshe. And therefore, he's saying, it's my hope, because I had a machlokus with Yisro about this. I parted ways with him, and I gave him my first son to go his way, but my way, my hope is that they will embrace the chukim fully, as represented by Eliezer. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu assured him that it would be the case. And the source in the pasuk, and this is how it all comes together, are the words V'shem Ha'echad Eliezer. They are the source for this idea. Not to say that this is Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. It's not Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. But V'shem Ha'echad Eliezer is a reference to the way that Moshe brought Eliezer up. He's the first of his children to bring him up that way. And later on, Rabbi Eliezer's opinion about Parah Adumah will only find a full reception with those that were brought up in Moshe's way. And that's how the Pshat and the Drash come together in that way. So it's, I believe it's a wonderful explanation of these midrashim that were so enigmatic and inscrutable, really, at the outset. This is the biur of Reb Shimon Schwab. Okay. So Yisro, as we get to Sheni, it doesn't take him long to see that there are certain things that he would have done perhaps otherwise. And he's not backwards in coming forwards in terms of talking to Moshe about it. It's striking every year, just this notion that one would easily have expected Yisro, he's the newcomer, there's so much he doesn't know, he sees things are a little bit different, but it's the Jewish people, what are you going to do? He should just sit on the side, and he just doesn't do that. He sees something, he questions Moshe about it, he's got his own suggestions. It's amazing. Of course, the final amazing thing is that to a certain degree they're accepted. Okay. But what does the Pasuk say? This is Perek Yud Ches in Pasuk Yud Gimel. If we would describe it, because we'll see the Pasukim inside it just a moment, but we know, and this is how the overview Baal Peh, we would say, is that he sees Moshe, and Moshe's judging everyone by himself, and Yisro feels that it's not correct. Interestingly, not that it's not correct to Moshe, although he cares about Moshe, it's not correct to the Jewish people. He says, Ma ata oseh la'amazeh, what are you doing to them? If you wear yourself out, so then you won't function properly, and they won't get a good hearing. So he really has the benefit of the Jewish people in mind, as he says to Moshe, why are you taking on the whole burden by yourself? And then he has a suggestion. He says, you'll wear yourself out, brother. You should have this whole system. Sorry, I love him. Sorry, Meos. And then you can answer the things at the top. That's his suggestion. Now, there is a very major parshanut discussion on this group of psukim in the writings of Reb Velvel Soloveitchik, the Rav of Brisk, the son of Reb Chaim. And his peirush on the Torah, very often, it's mamish pshat, mamish parshanut. And he just opens up in that Brisk type of way, all of a sudden, the psukim, they're just clear as day. What we would have described in the rather general terms, he divides into their categories and their principles, and then the whole parsha just achieves such a higher resolution. And let's follow with the Brisker Rav to see these psukim. You see, the truth of the matter is that Moshe does three things. He is functioning in three capacities as he's interacting with Bnei Yisrael. And they are referred to in Pasuk Tesvav and Tetzayin. And let's identify them. Vayoma Moshe Lachosno. So Moshe says, Ki yavo elai ha'am lidrosh elokim. The first thing is, people come to me, lidrosh elokim, to seek out answers to their questions. They have questions, they're looking to me for the answer. Like we saw with Rivka, vateilech lidrosh es Hashem. She had something was happening, she didn't know, she inquired of the Navi. In that case, it was Shem ben Noah. So people are coming to Moshe, lidrosh elokim. That's department one. Department two, ki yelem davar bo elai. If they have an issue with each other, they come to me, v'shafatati ben ishu ben re'ehu, and I judge them. That's number two, judging and settling disputes. And number three, v'hodati es chukei ha'elokim v'es torosov. This is a third thing. This is not about adjudicating disputes. This is about teaching Torah. Torah tzivolanu Moshe. I mean, Moshe has this ongoing involvement in transmitting Torah to the Jewish people. So again, to state them, these three in front of us, you have responding to specific questions that people have, that they come to Moshe to ask of Hashem. We don't know what those questions are, but presumably significant enough that they need an answer. Number two, adjudicating disputes. And number three, teaching mitzvahs. So now the shaila is, having identified that Moshe is doing three things, how many of those three things does Yisro feel could be done by someone else? And we'll see very quickly that actually only one of those three things could be done by anyone else. And that's the area of judgment. I mean, people who have received the body, the basic corpus of Mishpatim, so then they're able to adjudicate. Certainly they couldn't do the other two. Moshe is the only one that can inquire at the time. Imdu ve'eshmecha ma yitzav Hashem lachem. That they come a question. He can access HaKadosh Baruch Hu for information then and there. No one else can do that. They can hope, they can try, and maybe that night in a vision something will come. Moshe can have the answer for them within a matter of minutes. No one else can replicate that. Secondly, as the one who's giving over new Torah information, no one else can do that. Torah Tzivul and Moshe. He's the only one who receives it. He's the only one that can give it. And therefore, when it says in Pasuk Yudalet, Vayar Chosein Moshe, Es kol asher hu oseh la'am. So you see that Yisro sees kol here means he sees the whole thing. He watches Moshe and he sees him involving in all of these pursuits. Now, how many of them does he have an issue with? So here the Brisker Rav says a very beautiful thing, because Yisro asks him, Ma hadavar hazeh asher ata oseh la'am. What is this thing that you're doing to the people? That's interesting. The pasuk said he saw everything, but then he asks Moshe about this thing, meaning with most of the everything, he doesn't have a problem with Moshe doing it. Moshe's the only one that can. But there's one thing that he does have a problem with, and he calls that hadavar hazeh. One of those three. Now the question is, well, how will we know which of the three? Well, what does he say? Ma davar azeh asher ata oseh la'am. What is this thing? Madua ata yoshev levadecha. Why are you alone sitting? V'chol ha'am nitzav alechem in boker ha'erev. And everyone else is standing over you or by you, in front of you, from morning to evening. Says the Brisker Rav. Let's consider. The thing that Yisro has an issue with is where Moshe is sitting, everyone else is standing. That's a din Torah. That's a mishpat. That's the case that needs adjudicating. Because that's the halacha. When a din Torah, the Baalei din, the plaintiff and the defendant stand, the dayan sits. You're sitting, they're standing. You see, with regards to the other two things, you don't have that situation where Moshe's sitting and they're standing. After all, if Moshe is inquiring of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so when someone inquires, as we see from the Urim V'Tumim and the other settings, everyone needs to stand. Moshe can't be sitting down when he's inquiring of Hashem. They'd both be standing. And what about the third thing of Moshe teaching? Ketzad Seder Mishnah says the Gemara in Erevin, Moshe came in, he sat down, everybody else sat down, and he began to teach. No one was standing. Which means that with regards to these three things, when it comes to inquiring of Hashem, they're both standing. When it comes to teaching Torah, they're both sitting. The only case where he's sitting and they're standing is Din Torah. And that's why, of all the things that Yisro saw, his problem is Hadavar Hazeh, where you're sitting and they're standing, that's the Mishpat. And therefore, as Moshe answers and tells Yisro all the things that he does, which he describes in Pasuk Tesvav and Pasuk Tet Zayin, again, he says, Ki avoham nedrosh elokim, my duties are to respond to their specific needs if they need me to inquire of Hashem. Second, Ki yelahem davar in Pasuk Tet Zayin, bo elai v'shafatati bein ish uvein re'ehu, he adjudicates. And number three, I teach them, v'dat yaslukei elokim es terosav. So how does Yisro respond? Once again, Vayomer Chosen Moshe Elav, Lo Tov Hadavar Asher Ata Oseh. There's one thing which is not good. You see, Navol Tibol Gamataga Ama Amazeh Asher Imach. This will wear you out. The adjudicating Ki Chaved Mimcha Davar Lo Tuchal Aso Levadecha. And now Yisro gives his plan. He has it all worked out. Ata. And once again, let's keep in mind these three areas, for Yisro is not only suggesting change, he's endorsing that which he does agree with. Firstly, I 100%. In terms of that function, where you are before Hashem because you need to bring the questions to Hashem, that's got to be you. No one else can do that. Number two, and teach them Torah. Only you can do that. You're the only one who receives Torah. 100%. You teach them. No one else can teach them. No one else knows anything yet. But there's one of these three things that I would suggest a change. Pasuk Kaf Aleph, Mishpat. And that's when Yisro gives his suggestion, etc. Sorry, Alofim, sorry, Meir. So this is the parsha now, completely opened up, as clear as could be, exactly what it is that Yisro saw, and what was yes motzechein b'inav, what was not motzechein b'inav. The whole that's the parsha, not classic Reb Velvel Soloveitch. From here, I'd like to move to the Aseres HaDibros. We're not going to cover all 10. In fact, we'll move straight away to number 9. Lo sa'ane v'reacha eid shaker. And that is in Perek Kaf. It's the end of Pasuk Yud Gimel. It's to mention, by the way, as we mentioned, I think, in the past, I heard this from my father's atzal in the name of Rav Meir Shapira, that there were often meetings about all sorts of things, Moetzes, and everyone got together. And the goal was to find a solution to the problems that were affecting European Jewry, etc. Some of the participants had solutions. Some of them were experts in pointing out the problems, but didn't have much to say in terms of solutions. And one of these gentlemen was holding forth on one occasion, and he says, this is wrong, and this is wrong. And that was it, he finished. And Rabbi Shapir took the floor after that and said, I think now I understand a Rashi in Parshas Yisro. Rashi tells us in the beginning of Yisro that Yisro had seven names, and he goes through each of them and explains what was behind the name, and He's called Yisro because a parsha in the Torah was added for him, which is an amazing thing. Namely, says Rashi, "Va'ata techazeh." Right? When he told Moshe, you've got to set them up, find them. Sorry, I love him. Sorry, Meir. So Meir Shapira said, "I have a shaila." Yisro did add a section to the Torah, but the section that he added began a good while before Va'ata techazeh. It begins in Pasuk Yud Gimel, like we saw, Vayar facing Moshe. It's already. He sees, and Vayomer, he says to Moshe, "What are you doing?" Right? Naval Tibol. He's saying a lot of things. But the parsha that is a tribute to him as his contribution to the Torah is Vata Techazeh. Says Meir Shapira, "Why?" And he answered, "Apparently, we see from here that you're not considered to have contributed anything by just pointing out how disaster will strike and how the whole thing is all wrong. As long as he's saying, you'll be worn out, and this isn't good, and this isn't good, that's not yet adding a parsha to the Torah. You've got something to suggest, Vata Techazeh, that's already a Sofas Parsha la Torah." That was his comment on that particular occasion, and much truth in there, of course. Okay, so we move now to the end of Pasuk Yud Gimel, which is Lo Sa'aneh V'Re'acha Eid Shaker, what we know as false testimony. One of the Aseres HaDibros, okay. as abhorrent as lying is generally, but to bring falsehood into the Beis Din is a corruption of Mishpat, and it's significantly worse. Rabbeinu Bachya asks an interesting shaila. Lo sa'aneh v're'acha, how would we translate the word re'acha, your fellow? Okay, now, there's another word which is often used almost interchangeably, and that is achicha. Lo tesh lo zireh shor achicha nidachim ashev tishivim lachim. It's your brother, your fellow. They're very generically they sound to be very similar, and they refer to your peer, your fellow Jew. It's interesting that here the Torah chose lo sa'aneh v're'acha eid shaker, and not Lo sa'aneh v'achicha, that's his simple shaila in Loshon HaKodesh. And Rabbi Nebach has two answers, and each of them is a chiddush. The first answer, says Rabbi Nebach, is that the Torah here used re'acha, your fellow, and not your brother, for a simple reason. Achicha means your brother. Now, in the strictest possible sense, your brother is literally the son of your same parents. By extension, of course, everyone's your brother, and the Jews are one large family. It's true. That's an extended meaning of achicha, and it can mean that. But it will never not mean your brother. And the point is, the Torah says, you can't act as a false witness against your brother. Now, the truth is, when it comes to your actual brother, you can't even be a true witness. Because family, close family relations are disqualified from giving testimony. And therefore, the Torah didn't say lo taneh v'achicha, even though we would normally intuit that achicha means your brother in general. It's true, but that's only an extension of the primary meaning of your brother. But the Torah can't say don't give false testimony against your brother, because the implication is if it's not false, it's okay. But for your actual brother, it's not okay. And therefore, re'acha, which has no familial connotation, it's just the fact that it's your fellow, that's the first choice. That's Rabbeinu Bachya. Pure pashtanut. Secondly, says Rabbeinu Bachya, and this is his suggestion, it could be that the reason why the Torah said lo taneh v're'acha, because there's a difference in scope, there's a difference in connotation between the word re'acha and achicha. Achicha extends beyond your family, that is to say your physical brother, extends to all of the Jewish people. Re'acha, says Rabbeinu Bachya, extends beyond the Jewish people. Anyone is your fellow. Whether he's Jewish, not Jewish, they're all your fellows. A Gentile is not your brother, he's not part of the Jewish family, but he's still your fellow. And therefore, says Rabbeinu Bachya, I understand that the choice of Re'acha means to tell us that there's a part of the losas here is to give false testimony against anyone, even if he's not Jewish. Now, do I have a source for that notion? But Paul said one would like to back it up, that Reacha is non-denominational in that way. I do. It happens to be my sources from Parshas Bo. Whereas the Jewish people are leaving Mitzrayim, it says, Daber Naba Aznia Am, Perikud Aleph, Pasuk Beis, speak to them, V'yishalu Ish Me'es Re'ehu, V'yisha Me'es Ru'usak Le'chesiv V'chleizav. Now who's asking from whom? Right, the Jews are asking from the Egyptians. Now Egyptians, if anyone would be most likely to be voted off the list of fellows, it's going to be Mitzrayim. And still they're called Re'ehu. That's his Raya. Now, many Mepharshim respond to this second explanation of Rabbeinu Bachya. From the Halacha, there are many situations that we see that the Pasuk uses Reacha, but it doesn't yet refer to people outside of the Jewish people. It's a complicated thing to say that Reacha, you see from Halacha often that it's restricted, nonetheless, but because of to B'nai Yisrael. But what about his proof? His proof is that in Mitzrayim they're called, the Mitzri is called Reacha, Eishmeis Re'ehu, Ishameis Re'usa. Well, the Torah Tamima, in his Sefer Tosefes Bracha, which is a separate volume, five volumes there on the his thoughts on the Torah, he suggests that there's no proof from there. And the reason why is because, in a sense, Jewish identity and the circle of what it means to be Jewish is formed fully when the Torah is given. Right? At Matan Torah, that's when the Jewish identity of the Jewish people becomes fully assembled. At that point, they receive Tariq Mitzvahs, the famous statement of Rav Sadia Gaon, Ein umasenu uma ele b'shel terosa. The defining characteristic of the Jewish people is the Torah. Before you receive the Torah, you are not as distinct from other peoples. Of course, there's so many other things in which ways they were. But therefore, really what the Tosefes Bracha is saying, and it's a very interesting point, you can't necessarily prove the commonality and the Reacha factor between Jew and non-Jew before the Torah was given, and impose that or apply that to once the Torah has been given. It could be once you have Tariq Mitzvahs, Reacha, you've just got that much less in common. And you don't know that the scope of Reacha is what it used to be. Very interesting points. So this is Rabbeinu Bachya's discussion with regards to why it uses Reacha as opposed to Achicha. Now, there are another couple of dikdukim. It's a very short dibur, but nonetheless, lo tanev reacha et shaker, do not testify bereacha. What's the connotation of bereacha? Literally, it sounds like with him, but of course, it's not with him. It's against him. Perhaps it would have said lo tane al reacha, right, against him or neged reacha. And also, aid shaker. Again, I think when we translate this into English, we gloss over it a little bit. It's almost like the English translation, it allows us to get away with it, almost. Because there should be a subject here. And the subject is your testimony. The object is the other person. And the subject is the testimony. So what you do vis-a-vis another person, if it's false, is false testimony. Which means that presumably the Pasuk should have said, Lo taneh v'reacha edus sheker. Edus sheker is testimony. Eid sheker is a person. That's you. But we're talking about what you're saying. You don't say false witness, you say false testimony. And this question is raised by the Ibn Ezra. And he has a rather, I think, rare accompaniment to this question. He says, I don't know the lashon in front of me, but something like, Ze kama shanim sha'alti es libi madua amratora eid shaker. He says, for years I was wondering about this question. We never know how long the Ibn Ezra wondered about things, but we know that he wondered for this one about years. Why does it say eid shaker and not eidus sheker? And again, the English translation is, do not bear false witness against him. That's almost making it worse. Essentially, they adapted the problem into English because it's not good English anymore. You can't bear false witness. You can. It's almost like the problem became the answer, and now you can't question it anymore because that's what the verse is. But why does it say that? Why is the translation clearly is not "do not bear false testimony," but it should be. So the Ibn Ezra says, "Tzarech Lomar." that Lo Sanav Riacha, don't testify against him almost as an aid sheker, as a false witness. Okay, it's not insurmountable. A very interesting question, and not only a suggestion for the perush of the pasuk, but it's an interesting question, and it's to be found in the writings of the Pardes Yosef, and the Meshech Chochma says something similar. See, Pardes Yosef also shaina. You need two witnesses in order to, for monetary law and for punishments and the like. Less than two, Besdin doesn't accept. Al pi shnei edim yakum davar, al pi shnayim edim, etc. Okay. Now, what would happen if a person is approached by someone who says, I'm in a difficult situation? And the reason why is because I saw this person do something. I saw him steal. Now, do you believe me that I saw him steal? This person is beyond reproach. He has 100% credibility. Now, the problem is that I want to go to Beis Din. I want to do the right thing. But they won't accept me because I'm only one witness. If you come with me and you say that you saw the same thing, and you can say that, because even though you didn't see it, but you believe me, I would never lie to you, and you really do believe it. You're telling the truth. I just need another person to come along with me. Is that acceptable? So it's an interesting situation. On the one hand, you do believe him implicitly, 100%, but on the other hand, you didn't see it. But if what he's saying is true, then this person will get away with theft, and you could have prevented it. But the alternative will be to say something that you didn't really see, but you know that it's true. You'd be prepared to swear that it's the truth is what he's saying. You just can't say that you saw it. Interesting situation. Says the Pardes Yosef, the Torah says, Lo sa'aneh v'reacha eid shaker. It doesn't only mean don't testify something that is false. Lo sa'aneh v'reacha. Reacha here is not the person about whom you're testifying. Reacha is your fellow witness. And you're ber reacha, you're with him. Don't do that. You never saw it. Lo sa'aneh v'reacha. And even though he's on level, why? Because you're an aid shaker, you're a false witness. Interesting. It doesn't say false testimony, because that's not the question. Maybe his testimony is correct. Maybe his testimony is correct. So you may not be saying something that's false. The testimony might not be false, but you're a false witness because you didn't see it. You can only give testimony about something that you saw. And so a fascinating explanation how it's aid sheker and it's ber reacha, and all of a sudden the reacha is your partner in testimony. This is the explanation of the Pardes Yosef. Now, Rashi, when we see the word reacha, so a further discussion of reacha, who refers to your fellow, Rashi gives us a new dimension into the word reacha. It's in the course of his commentary to Maseches Shabbos and Daf Lamed Aleph. It's the famous case, and it's a Rashi that we need to know. It's the famous case of the ger. There were a few gerim there. They came to Shammai. They wanted to be misgayer in terms that were unacceptable and essentially an affront to Torah. And along comes they come to Hillel, and Hillel somehow works it out for them. So the famous case is that he wants to receive the whole Torah al regel achas, standing on one leg. Shammai threw him out. That's an insult to Torah. Essentially saying, how much can there be already? I can't stand that long, but I presume there's not that much. So give me the whole thing. I'm sure I'll get like the main thing. That's a bizoyah. It's nice to have a working, one word formula, one sentence formula, but sometimes it can be belittling. Right? They tell the famous story of the rabbi who's traveling to give his shiur overseas. He finds himself sitting next to a scientist, nuclear physicist, astrophysicist. So he starts preparing his shiur. So the physicist says, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm preparing a Torah talk." He says, a whole Torah talk needs preparation? I understood that the whole of the Bible isn't it just love your neighbor as yourself. I mean, what else is there to say? In the meanwhile, this astrophysicist, he's traveling to give a talk on physics, and he's preparing his. So the rabbi says, what are you doing? He says, preparing a talk on astrophysics. So the rabbi says, astrophysics? I thought the whole thing could be summed up in the words, twinkle, twinkle, little star. So to put something in a formula sometimes can have that belittling type of thing. What else can there be to say already? So Shammai threw him out, but Hillel took him in. And Hillel said, he said this, Da'alach sani lechavrach letavid. What you don't like, don't do to your friend. He says, that's the Torah, rekel achas. Oh, there's just one thing. There's plenty of commentary. Okay, that's home. That's for you now. Idich peirushu, everything else is a commentary on that. So go learn it. Don't you want to know the commentary? So you can put your other foot now and use both of them to take you to the Beis HaMedrash. So Rashi asks a simple question, and everyone asks this, but Rashi asks it first. How is this the whole Torah al regel achas? We know that the Torah is divided into two categories, bin Adam l'makom, bin Adam l'chaveir, between man and man, between man and God. So v'hafta recha kamocha, you could safely say covers half of the Torah, bin Adam l'chaveir, but there's that whole half called bin Adam l'makom, and no one's really spoken about it yet. How could Hillel say this is the whole Torah of regel achas? And everyone has something to say on this question, but Rashi's answer is stunning. Rashi says, "V'hafta l'reicha kamocha," is the whole Torah. It includes bin Adam l'makom because reicha is also Hashem. Hashem's also your friend. He quotes the pasuk in Mishlei, "Reicha v'rei avicha al tazov." And what it means is that Hashem lahavdil. I mean, what a thing to say! But it means that Hashem, he has your best interest at heart. He's your rea. V'hatorecha kamocho. Oh, and also you don't want him to ignore you when you speak to him. So don't ignore him when he speaks to you. It's a simple, and that's the whole Torah. Regel achas. That's all of the Torah. Ben Adam l'makom, your reacha with a small r, and Ben Adam l'makom right there with a big r. And Rashi therefore introduced to us that v'haftal a reacha kamocha also includes HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What an amazing thing. Says the Alshich HaKadosh, what are the implications for our dibur, lo saneh v'reacha eid shaker? Don't say false things about, false testimony about reacha. Is there any way to get a specific sense of what that might mean when we have this expanded understanding that Reacha could include HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So the Al-Sheikh says there is a Medrash which states, it's a fascinating idea, that the Aseres HaDibros are parallels to the Asara Ma'amaros Shebahem Nivra HaOlam, that the world was created with the 10 utterances, and as surely as the physical world was laid down with these 10 emanations, so too the spiritual way the world should be, the 10 dibros follow a similar pattern. Some of them, of course, are easier to understand than others, or immediately intuitive. Bereshis bara Elokim is there, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Bereshis is a mamar, as the Gemara says, Bereshis nami mamarhu. Now, according to this, Lo saneh v'reacha eid shaker, which is the ninth dibur, will correspond to the ninth utterance with which the world is created. And that ninth utterance, this, according to the Al-Sheikh, and this is also the approach of Vilna Gaon, is Naaseh Adam. Naaseh Adam is the ninth Ma'amar. Interestingly, what was created? What's number 10? Number 10 was when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that everything is there available for you to be eaten, for you to eat. That with that he created the capacity within a person to digest food and to continue living. That's the 10th Ma'amar. Some say the 10th Ma'amar is Peru Revu, right, which gives them the capacity to themselves create. But the ninth is Naaseh Adam. Aha. Now Naaseh Adam, of course, is very unusual because it's written in the plural. Naaseh Adam, Tameinu Kidnuseinu. I mean, of course, you know, that's what to make of that. And, well, we know, Rashi tells us, the answer is, from the Medrash, the answer is to teach you Derech Eretz. There's two possibilities. There's two ways to interpret it. There's two ways to respond to it. There's the right way, the moral way, and then there's the wrong way. The right way is to teach you Derech Eretz. But you could get the wrong idea about that pasuk, if you want. And that's why the ninth of the Dibur corresponding to that, because it came in Naaseh Adam, the subtext is Lo taneh v'reacha eid shaker. Don't say the wrong thing about that pasuk.
Naase Adam. Don't take the path of falsehood that it refers to multiple deities, whatever. Say the right thing, that it's to teach you Derech Eretz, to teach you good midos. So this is the comment of the Al-Sheikh. And we've mentioned in the past, and I heard this from Rav Cooperman, my uncle, that the Medrash is well known. Moshe hears HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictate to him Naase Adam, and Moshe objects, which itself is a chiddush. We weren't aware that he's entitled to ask questions about what he's writing, and so early on, but he does. Hashem says, say Naase Adam, and Moshe puts his pen down and says, that seems a bit problematic. And Hashem says, it's to teach you Derech Eretz. And Moshe says, well, people could get the wrong idea. I mean, Naase Adam, it's in the plural. Hashem says, Kol Arotze Litos Yova V'Yiteh. Whoever wants to make a mistake, will make a mistake. In the meanwhile, you carry on writing. Now, from a certain point of view, the question seems to be better than the answer. Because the question is, people can make a mistake. And the answer, okay, so they'll make a mistake. But, you know, there's a great Musar lesson here. There's Midos to be learned here. True. But isn't it better to choose a juncture to teach midos where the consequences of misunderstanding are not heresy? It seems to be a very dangerous situation here. But the Mefarshim say it's not dangerous at all. No, it's interesting to consider. Take a poll. How many people ever made that mistake of Naase Adam Kitzamina? And of those people, how many people was that really the beginning of their mistake? See, Hashem's response, Kol Arotze Litos Yova V'Yiteh, whoever wants to make a mistake will make a mistake. There's something about certain, if your heart's in the right place, you will never make a mistake about this. Could you really honestly make a mistake? Naase Adam. The next pasuk says, Vayivra Elokim Hashem B'Tzalmo. And the whole Torah is full of Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Did a person ever make an honest mistake? No. The only mistake that could be made is a dishonest mistake. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you can't protect against a dishonest mistake because you'll be walking on eggshells from here till the end of Vezos HaBracha. Because if a person's looking to make a mistake, if he wants a mistake, he will. You can't write a Torah for someone like that. You'll never say anything. And therefore, you need to write what people need to hear. And people won't make a mistake if they don't want to make a mistake. And it's true. But the PS of Rav Cooperman is that not only is HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying that people won't make a mistake. You know, there's a midas lesson here. It's more than that. From a certain point of view, the only thing that will stop them making the mistake is to teach them the midas lesson. A person may fall into philosophical issues just because he really has ego issues. He just doesn't want to submit to Hashem Echad. And there, that's and he begins the Torah, reading the Torah like that. So when he sees Naase Adam, I mean, it's a godsend in the worst possible way. So what's the antidote to that? The antidote is not to walk on eggshells or around him. The antidote is have a bit of a talk to him about midos. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu consulted with his peers, maybe you should consult with your peers. And maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu does have something to say that's good for you. And that's the antidote to these philosophical blunders that people may cause for themselves. So much food for thought. We'll pick up again in Mitzvah Hashem next week, Parshas Mishpatim.